Before we begin, just a very special thank you to the Heart Teams for hosting this shiur. So I thought we'd take a little bit of time tonight to talk about a general mitzvah, of course a mitzvah, a fundamental mitzvah. It speaks to everybody. That's the mitzvah of tefillah. I want to speak about tefillah, different dimensions of tefillah. Talk a little bit about Shmoneh Esrei, a little bit about Kriya Shma, a little bit about some of the brachas we say in tefillah. I want to try to gear it towards what a woman's obligation is in Uchos tefillah, perhaps certain aspects of tefillah that women are exempt from, slightly different nuances of chiyuvim of tefillah. We'll see whether we can put together in this short time that we have tonight. So the Mishnah in Maseches Brachos states almost unequivocally, Nashim chayavos b'tefillah, that women are obligated in tefillah. Now the word tefillah in the Mishnah usually refers to Shmoneh Esrei. That's the main, the Amidah is the main component of tefillah. So the Mishnah seems to be telling us that women are obligated to daven Shmoneh Esrei. Now I say seems because there's actually another opinion as to what the Mishnah may be referring to. In order to understand what the Mishnah may or may not be referring to, we need a little bit of a background to what the obligation of tefillah is all about. Why are we davening from? Where does it say in the Torah? Where does it say in the Chumash that we're supposed to be davening? The very notion of tefillah is somewhat shrouded in mystery. Now, it's true that the Torah does describe many people who daven. The Avos are constantly davening, and Moshe is davening. Everyone's davening. But does it say in the Chumash explicitly that one is obligated to be mispalel? So the Rambam interprets the Pasuk that we say in Kriya Shema, Ula avdo b'chol levavchem, that we are obligated to be Ovid Hashem b'chol lev. We have to serve a Kadosh Baruch with our entire heart. What does that mean to be Ovid b'chol lev? How do you serve Hashem with your heart? So I understand the term avoda as it relates to karbonos. The karbon is called an avoda. It's not with your heart, it's with your hands. It's avoda sayyadayim. What's avoda salev? So the Rambam quotes from the Gemara Maseches Tainis and Daf Beis that avoda shebalev refers to tefillah. And the Rambam saw in this pasuk a Torah obligation to daven every single day. Once a day, everybody has to daven. The Rambam says the fact that you have to daven three times a day, and the fact that there's a text of Shmoneh Esrei, and you try to have a minyan, those are all midirabanan. But min haTorah, the bare bone minimum mitzvah is each and every day a person has to daven. Says the Rambam, that's what the Mishnah means when it says hanoshim chayavos b'tefillah. The mitzvah min haTorah of tefillah applies to women as well as to men, which makes a lot of sense because tefillah is not a zman grum; it's not a time bound mitzvah. You can daven whenever you want. Again, as the Rambam just told us, minat Torah, you want to daven in the daytime, in the nighttime, you have a few minutes here and there. There's no set time, there's no shachos mincha ma'ariv. Therefore, noshim, quite understandably, are the same degree of obligation as men, noshim chayavos b'tefillah. What the Mishnah does not mean, according to the simple reading of the Rambam, is that women are in fact exempt from davening Shmoneh Esrei, according to the Rambam, because Shmoneh Esrei is a time-bound mitzvah. You can only daven shachris in the morning, mincha in the afternoon, ma'ariv at night, in contrast to some other places that may get a little bit of the times mixed up. But you can only daven at certain times. And therefore, Shmoneh Esrei should fall back to the regular category of mitzvah saseh, shazman, grama, and presumably women would be exempt. So in one fell swoop, the Rambam told us, nashim chayavos v'tfila min haTorah, nashim pturos from Shmoneh Esrei. What would you have to say to be yotze min haTorah? Anything you want. So that's what the Magen Avraham quotes, that there was a custom. The Magen Avraham lived in the 1500s in Poland. He writes that he doesn't see that the women were daven Shmoneh Esrei. A lot of women were not daven Shmoneh Esrei. Who were they following? They were following the Rambam's view that as long as you say something, says the Magen Avraham, which Jewish woman or Jewish man for that matter doesn't talk to Hashem once a day? Something hurts. You need a parnasa, you need a shidduch, whatever. Something you say for your Baruch Shalom, that's tefillah min haTorah. And that's all women are obligated in. This view of the Rambam is probably not accepted by us, l'halacha. Most of the Rishonim disagree and follow the view of the Ramban. The Ramban, interestingly enough, says that the chiyuv of tefillah min haTorah doesn't exist on a daily basis. It exists in very, very unique situations, what we call an eis tzara. Chas v'shalom, there's a war, somebody's sick, there's a big eis tzara, a famine, a drought, whatever. But then you have to daven min haTorah. But day in, day out, there's no mitzvah tefillah. When the Mishnah says Nashim Chayavos Tefillah, it refers to Shmoneh Esrei. So it comes out according to the Ramban, who says that there's no real Tefillah D'Araisa, there is a Tefillah D'Rabbanan, and that Tefillah D'Rabbanan is obligatory on women as well. Aye, but it's a bit sasesh as man grama. So the Ramban responds, well, because of the unique aspect of Rachamim, women also need Rachamim, they need the mercy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, women are on equal footing with men in terms of Tefillah. So we have two very, very different traditions here in the Rishonim. does a woman, is a woman obligated to daven? She wants to daven, it's wonderful, but is she obligated to daven day in, day out, Shmon Esrei? According to the view of the Rambam, probably not. According to the view of the Rambam, probably yes. How do we, with the capital W, pasken on the Shaila? Mishnah Berurah tells us that most authorities follow the Ramban, and therefore the Mishnah Berurah strongly recommends that women should be davening every day Shmon Esrei. So let's see what that means. They should be davening Shachris every day Shmon Esrei. They should be davening Mincha every day Shmon Esrei. Do I hear Ma'ariv? Maybe. Depends who you ask. Says the Mishnah Berurah, there's a general custom, the Mishnah Berurah says that women don't daven Shmon Esrei. Not that they're not allowed, but they generally don't daven Ma'ariv Shmon Esrei. What's the rationale for that? Because in the days of the Gemara, Tefillas Ma'ariv was almost a voluntary tefillah also. We call Tefillas Ma'ariv Rishus, which is beyond the scope of right now. The Shmon Esrei of Ma'ariv was not on par with the first two Shmon Esreis of the day, and therefore women, generally speaking, didn't accept upon themselves to daven the third tefillah of Ma'ariv. They stuck to the basics of Shachris and Mincha. So this is the background for a psak that appears in many, many communities. Many women follow this practice, that they daven Shachris Shmon Esrei, they daven Mincha Shmon Esrei, and they don't daven Ma'ariv. There are other women who have accepted upon themselves to daven Ma'ariv as well. So we're not going to take a show of hands here who davens Ma'ariv, but yesh v'yesh. Shachris and Mincha we strongly recommend. Ma'ariv, up for someone up for grabs. But this whole discussion was only concerning Shmon Esrei. That's a very small part of tefillah. What about everything else? So let's take it. Let's take it bit by bit, piece by piece. How does a woman's obligation fit in? So when it comes to Kriya Shema, here we find almost a little bit of a split. When it comes to Kriya Shema, women are technically exempt from Kriya Shema, as the Mishnah tells us, because Kriya Shema is a classic example of a mitzvah saseh shazman grama. It's a time-bound positive mitzvah, and the rule is that, except for the few exceptions to the rule, women are exempt from mitzvah saseh shazman grama. Usually when I ask the Talmidim in Yeshiva, when we get to some sugi about mitzvah seishas ben grava, so I always draw my favorite question. I ask them, give me like a ballpark estimate of how many mitzvah seishas ben grava are there. Just time. So I'm going to throw out the question here also. No one be embarrassed if you give me the wrong answer. So most of the boys say, oh, there must be, I don't know, 60, 70. Some give like some silly answer like, oh, there must be like 400, only 248 mitzvah seishas altogether. So you're not going to get more than 248. So how many are there? 30, 40? I tell them, nowhere near. 20, nowhere near. You know how many there are? Altogether? Six. There are six mitzvahs asay shazman grama. That's all there is. Maybe a seventh. There's a machlokus about whether there's a sixth, or the sixth that appear in the Gemara. One of them is Kriya Shema, one of them is Tefillin, one of them is Tzitzis, one of them is Shofar, Lulav, and Sukkah. That's all there is. There's a machlokus in the Mishnah, but a sphere of Omer maybe made the list or not. Any other mitzvah women are obligated in terms of mitzvah seishas shazman grama, which even those time-bound mitzvahs, such as matzah and kiddush and so, women are obligated anyway. They're all exceptions to the rule. So I guess it gets like a little bit of a bad press, the mitzvah seishas shazman grama, but there aren't so many altogether. But Kriya Shema is one of them. So on the one hand, in terms of pure obligation, women are exempt from Kriya Shema. On the other hand, the Rishonim are very quick to point out that we strongly encourage women to say Shema every day. Why is that? Because Shema is not just a mitzvah. Shema is an affirmation of our faith. Shema is kamal samachu shemayim. Women have to be makabel machu shemayim also. Now, they don't have to technically be yotze kriya shema. The difference being that they don't have to say up as man kriya shema. So your husband's got to be up by, I would say the crack of dawn, but at least by 9:15 or something. That's to make sure they say kriya shema bismana. Said if you a woman says kriya shema later in the day, that's also acceptable for kamal samachu shemayim. But in terms of an absolute obligation, women up to us. However, interestingly enough, there are some poskim who maintain that women are obligated, not in Kriya Shema, but they're obligated in the third parsha of Kriya Shema. That doesn't make any sense. If they don't have to say the first parsha, they don't have to say the second parsha, what's the third parsha for? The answer is, why do we say the third parsha of Shema? The third parsha of Shema is not for Shema. And part of it is tzitzis, but there's something else in there. The most important posuk of the third parsha of Shema is Ani Hashem Elokecha, Hotzei Yitzchem Me'eretz Mitzrayim. There's a mitzvah to mention Yitzchem Mitzrayim by Yom Uvalayla. Those may remember that from the Haggadah, Maskirin Yitzchem Mitzrayim Balaylos. According to the Magen Avraham, women are obligated in that mitzvah. And I'll tell you why. Because there's no moment on the clock that you don't say Yitzchem Mitzrayim. If you think about it, you say Yitzchem Mitzrayim all day, and you say it all night. There's no time when you're off. When it comes to Kriya Shema, you have a few hours that you're off. Kriya Shema is a sof zman Kriya Shema, only for the first 3 hours into the day. So that's called the zman grama. Yitzchem Mitzrayim is not a zman grama. That's a chiddush of the Magen Avraham. That'd be quite a chumrah that women have to say the third parsha of Shema. So some of you may be thinking to yourselves, okay, Baruch Hashem, breathe a sigh of relief. Well, I always say Shema every day. Of course I say the third parsha of Shema. I mean, I won't really challenge anyone, but who here says Kriya Shema at night? I don't mean Kriya Shema Lamita. Who says the three parshas of Kriya Shema every night? So a few hands up, I saw a few hands down. So those who don't say the third parsha of Kriya Shema at night are losing out the mitzvah of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So you can breathe a sigh of relief that there are others who say that women are pteras. It's almost like a Zman Grum. Maybe that eighth Zman Grum. Maybe other reasons. I think that the Minhag HaOlam, since we got only about two or three hands up and a majority of hands down, I think we could say that the Minhag HaOlam is that women generally don't necessarily say, some women do say Shema, but they don't really accept it as an obligation. So we assume that women are pteros from the first Pasha, second Pasha, and third Pasha. So it's a nice thing to say Shema Yisrael every morning, every night. In the morning you should say it when you daven. At night, even if you don't daven Ma'arav, you usually say Kriya Shema Lamita. So assuming that you make it to sleep at some point during the night. So all the women get the Kabbalah Samach HaShemayim part in, even if they didn't technically obligate in the midst of Kriya Shema. But now we get another part of the davening that's related to Kriya Shema, or maybe not related to Kriya Shema, that gets a little bit tricky in terms of a woman's obligation. That's the brachos surrounding Shema. You know that Kriya Shema is supposed to be said bibirchoseh. There are two brachas before, and then in the morning there's one bracha after, in the night there's two brachas after. Some have a custom of saying a third bracha after. So there are a whole part of the davening called birchos Kriya Shema. Are women obligated in birchos Kriya Shema? Not. So the answer is most probably not, because it's basically part of Shema, the pturas from Shema, the pturas from birchos Kriya Shema. What if a woman wants to volunteer to say the brachas of Shema? Is there anything wrong with that? So well, it depends which edah you come from. There's a big machlokas between Ashkenazim and the Sfaradim, which is really a machlokas in the Rishon between Rabbi Natan and the Rambam. A mitzvah that a woman is pturah from, a real bona fide, one of those big six mitzvahs that says man grama. Say, for example, take lulav, take sukkah, those are the easy ones. A woman wants to sit in the sukkah. Great. She wants to shake a lulav. Wonderful. Does she make a bracha now? So according to the Rambam, how can you make a bracha? How could you say with a straight face, Asher kedishanu mitzvosa b'tzivanu? You're not mitzvah, you're not obligated. But many times as you could say b'tzivanu. It's okay, you could say b'tzivanu also. And that's what our custom is. How can you say b'tzivanu? So two reasons. First of all, even if a woman is p'tura from a particular mitzvah, that means she's not obligated, but if she does it, she gets a kiyum ha-mitzvah. So there's no question when the woman sits in a sukkah, that's a good thing. She takes a lulav, that's a good thing. That's considered to be a mitzvah, we call a mitzvah kiyumis. It's a voluntary mitzvah. And you could say b'tzivanu. The Ran has a fascinating comment, a little bit of a diktuk. The Ran says, you know why you could say b'tzivanu? Because b'tzivanu is b'loshin rabim. Asher kidishanu, not just me, Klal Yisrael, v'tzivanu. Who, me? Oh, everybody. The men, women, we're all in this boat together. V'tzivanu, leishev asukah. So even though I personally am not v'tzivanu, we could say it al shem harabim. So I always say that the Hasidim have a lot of problem with this Ram, because the Hasidim pronounce the bracha, real galtziyana havara. Asher kidishani b'mitzvaysa v'tzivuni, so the who's and the he's don't exist. Say that... anyone whose husband's Balkari could tell them I said this joke, that the greatest brother, the easiest laning for a chassid to have, where Misnagin goes nuts over, is Pashas Tazria. Because Pashas Tazria is a fairly simple pasha, except that every other word is either nega hu or nega he, depending on whether it's the bosar or the nega, whether it's saras, depending on what it's modifying. So, and the problem is that in the Sefer Torah, hu and he is spelled the same way. It's not spelled with a yud. It's spelled hey, vav, aleph. Just one place it's pronounced hu, one place it's pronounced he. So, and if you make a mistake, it's wrong, because it's mamish loshen zoch loshen give. You have to correct him. So it's a misnagas nightmare, that pasha. Chosen, nagahi, tarasi, nagahi, tarasi. It's all the same thing. Hu's and he's are all the same thing. So it makes it, it's a good thing if you want to go. Pasha's Tazria is the place to go to the Hasidim. Back to the story. So women, according to Ashkenazi practice, do volunteer to perform, to recite brachas on those mitzvahs that it's appropriate for them to perform. The mitzvahs that first come to mind, the mitzvah of sukkah and lulav. There is another mitzvah that, although women are technically exempt from, they do perform. They go to many great strides to perform. That's the mitzvah to hear shofar. All women try to hear shofar. If they can't come to shul, they'll send them somebody to blow for them. No question about it. And therefore, if a woman is hearing the shofar from somebody, not in the context of shul, she should recite a bracha. That's what we do. They have second tekiyos here also, I imagine. Okay, so the Baal Tokeh comes, and usually one of the women makes the bracha. She makes l'shmo kol shofar on behalf of everybody, on behalf of all the women, and that's perfectly okay. According to Ashkenazi practice, that's what we do. The Poskim writes in Hilchos Rosh Hashanah that if a woman came to shul a little bit late and she missed the bracha of the Baal Tekeah, so she, right when they get to the next kiyas, let's say she comes at the beginning of Musaf, so she missed the bracha, the first sounds. So during Shemoneh Esrei, the Chiddush Shatz, whatever you daven, whatever your nusach is, so the first time they're about to blow, she should quickly say under her breath, bracha that Hashem can dishavet that's felt lishmach kol shofar. The same way she makes a bracha before sitting in the sukkah and makes a bracha before shaking on the lulav. So Ma'aseh Shoreik Achoya, I was the, before my days in Bergenfield, I was the Rav in Paramus, New Jersey. And in Paramus, they had an interesting custom on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. There's a machlokas, a poskim, whether you say Shechiyonu on the second day of Rosh Hashanah or not. So in Paramus, they couldn't figure out what to do. There was a big machlokas. The rabbi before me came up with the following compromise, that the Baal Tekeah would say, Lishmacho Shofar, he would stop, he would pause. Those who wanted to say the Shechiyonu would say it, and those who didn't. The Baal Tekeah didn't say whatever he did on the, as a shul, they didn't say it, but they gave 2-3 seconds everyone to say their own. Good. That was the background to the story. So my luck comes the second day of Rosh Hashanah. Nobody knew what the rabbi was doing. I didn't have to announce, but my tell you off the rabbi, I do say Shechiyonu, but I didn't want to announce it or get the half the shul should not like me, you know, the first time around. So came to Tekiyah Shofar. You know, they made the bracha, the Shmuel Shofar, and then they paused and everything. 5 minutes later, my daughter, who at the time was about 3 or 4 years old, those of you who know my older daughter, so she comes running into shul, and she comes running right up to the front of the shul. She says, the top of her lungs, Abba, Ima just came. That was strike number one, because now everybody knew that the rabbi, the Rebbetzin, just came late to shul, and that she's interrupting the entire dam. Ima just came, and she wants to know, when they blow shofar, she's supposed to make a bracha on the shofar. So now here, the din is, I already made the bracha. You're not supposed to talk during the whole Tekiyah Shofar. So she runs back. 30 seconds later, she comes running back in. Ima wants to know, should she make a Shechiyonu also? And now, oh my goodness, all eyes in the shul turn. This is the rabbi's moment of truth. So I put my head down under my talus. I nodded to my daughter, and she zoomed out, and I saw half the shul thumbs up, the other half thumbs down for this rabbi. Okay, anyway, getting back to the story. So since our practice is that women do recite brachas, even on those shofar, lulav, sukkah, etc., they can recite the brachas Kriya Shema as well, which is in fact I think that most women do. So far we've tackled Shemoneh Esrei, we got the Kriya Shema, we got the brachas Kriya Shema. Let's see what else we can pull, other parts of tefillah. What about Psukei Dezibra? So, you know, usually we have this mindset, oh, Psukei Dezibra is like that. You know, we learn in school, if you come late, you can start skipping this and skipping that. Yeah, it's the least important part of the davening. Well, guess what? For women, it's probably more important than Brichas Kriya Shema. Why? Brichas Kriya Shema, women are pterus from Psukei Dezibra, the chayapsit. Because the goal of Psukei Dezibra is the introduction to Shemoneh Esrei. It's supposed to get you into the spirit of Shemoneh Esrei. So women are chayapsit and Shemoneh Esrei, we pass them like the Ramban. Therefore, they have to say Psukei Dezibra. Now again, that was the chumrah. I'll give you a kula. Psukei Dezibra to be yotzei. Psukei Dezibra, you don't say every single last word. There's a hierarchy of psukim. Those who are able to, great. Those who are not able to. So remember, Baruch Sheomer, Asher Yishtabach, that's the bare bone minimum. If you have some time for a couple of halukas, there's a hierarchy of those and different psukim. So you got to look in the siddur, look in the back of the article, siddur, what to say when you come late to shul, but try not to come late. But if you're really tight, and you know, sometimes you're rushing in the kids, three kids are out the door in carpool, and you're around the dad to work, and you just something's got to get cut off, so you have to shave away a little bit of psukim zimra, okay. But in terms of a woman's obligation, so she really is obligated to the same extent as men in terms of the same psukim. So far we're going backwards in the davening. We started Shemoneh Esrei, we had the Kriya Shema, we had the Birch Kriya Shema, we're back to psukim. We might as well continue going in reverse. So we get to Karbanos. So people think, Karbanos? Oh, come on, that's not the real part of davening. I'll share with you what Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah in Maseches Brachos writes that, why do we say Karbanos in the morning? Or why shouldn't we be saying Karbanos in the morning? Since it's based on a Gemara, very, very powerful Ma'amar Chazal. Chazal say when HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises Avraham Avinu Eretz Yisrael, so Avraham Avinu turns to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, "Bama eda ki rashana." How do I know I'm going to get it? How do I know it's really going to happen? So what does it mean, how do I know? Chazal interpret that question to mean, what's chos, and what merit will I get Eretz Yisrael? To which the Pasuk then continues and says, bring karbanos. It says, kachli egla mishuleshes, all the brisman absarim, which is symbolic of the different karbanos that are brought. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu's response to Avram is, in the schus of the Beis HaMikdash, in the schus of the Karbanos, Klai Yisrael will get Eretz Yisrael. To which Avram Avinu turns around and says, that's great once we're in Eretz Yisrael, but if we're in Golos, how are we ever going to get back? What schus are we ever going to get back to Eretz Yisrael in? So to which HaKadosh Baruch Hu responded, part two, let them learn the Kabbalahs. Let them not forget the basics. If they discuss the Kabbalahs, they learn the Kabbalahs, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will count that as if you brought the Kabbalahs, and in that schus, you'll be able to go back there to Israel. Rabbi Yonah says, that's why Klal Yisrael says Kabbalahs every day. Want to come back here to Israel? Want to survive in Israel with this chus of the Kabbalahs? Should enable us to live in Eretz Israel? Says the Rabbi Yonah, that's why we say Kabbalahs every day. It's a powerful Rabbi Yonah. It's powerful. In the days of Rabbi Yonah, it was very powerful here. You had Rabbi Yonah sitting in Spain in the Middle Ages, you know, dreaming, who knows, maybe someday we'll make it to Eretz Israel. He didn't make it. Baruch Hashem, we have this chus. You have this chus, Baruch Hashem, live in Eretz Israel. Some of us, we have a mini chus, a mitzvah chus, at least to visit Eretz Israel. We have to maintain that schus. We have to make sure that HaKadosh Baruch Hu keeps that schus going. B'schus HaKabanos. So it's important. It's an important thing. It emphasizes to us. It puts our focus on Mehiri Ben HaMikdash in the most proper way. So yes, the ports say Kabanos in the day, every day. Should women say Kabanos? They also want the schus read. So why not? It's a wonderful thing. Does it mean you have to say every last page in the Siddur about Kabanos? No. No one should say the Parshas HaTomid, Vaydav Hashem Moshlam Tzavos B'nei Yisrael, maybe the Parshas Ketores if you have a little bit of time, a little bit of something, a little bit of the bare bone minimum. There should be this cognizance of the fact that Kabbalah is the real thing. Not just, you know, something that we, you know, talk about. It should be something that's part of our daily routine, a little bit of something, a little bit of some connection to the Kabbalah of the Beis HaMikdash. So still going backwards. What about Brachos? Brachos HaShachar? We're obligated to recite Brachos HaShachar. What about Birchas HaTorah? Birchas HaTorah gets a little bit tricky. Birchas HaTorah is a tricky one. First I'll tell you the answer, then I'll tell you how we got that answer. The Shulchan Aruch writes that women say Birchas HaTorah every day. That's the Shulchan Aruch Paskins. The women are mechuyavos, obligated to recite Birchas HaTorah. The three brachas, Asher Kiddushan, Mitzvah Sotzvan, Baharavna, and Asher Bachavan, women have to recite. There is a lot of lumdus as to why exactly women are obligated to recite this bracha to the full extent that men are. There are different answers that are given to this question. One of the answers is a beautiful answer that's given by Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. Reb Chaim says that, what is Birchas HaTorah on? Why we say Birchas HaTorah in the morning? Birchas HaTorah is not just a bracha on the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Birchas HaTorah is, this is, if you appreciate a little bit of brisk, it's on the cheftz of Torah. Cheftz means an object. It's the entity of Torah. When a Jew connects to Torah, the very connecting to Torah itself, that warrants a bracha. You can't possibly experience the very Torah not recite a bracha. It's inconceivable that a person should be involved somehow in the study of Torah and not say a bracha on it. It's impossible. And therefore, Reb Chaim says that the obligation to recite Birchas HaTorah is true for men, it's true for women. I'll tell you something, a radical statement. Maybe we should close it for this, but I'll tell you the story anyway. The Mishnah Berurah actually quotes a question whether, let's say, a man's not sure whether he recited Birchas HaTorah or not. So usually, if you're not sure you recited Birchas HaTorah, the best strategy is to try to find somebody who could say the Birchas HaTorah for you. So Mishnah Berurah quotes some poskim who say, what if the only person who you know hasn't said Birchas HaTorah is a woman? Maybe the woman can be motzi the man in Birchas HaTorah because she's obligated as well. We won't take this out of context, the statement. I'll tell you Ma'aseh Shoya Kachoya, following story that happened. It happened to me. Usually when I tell Ma'aseh, you know, I never really show the stories actually happen. But if they happen to you, then I know. Then I know they're true. It was soon after we got married. I was flying somewhere with my wife. It must have been very soon after, because just for the context of the story, because the fact that I had slept a few hours on the plane, so if we already would have had kids, that wouldn't have been a reality. So it must have been that window of opportunity before the kids were born. So we were flying. It was either Eretz Yisrael or California. Those are the two places that we went in those years. My wife was from California. And I fell asleep for a couple of hours at night. And, you know, it was one of those sleeps where, am I sure that I'm chayav to say Birchas HaTorah? I'm not sure I'm chayav to say Birchas HaTorah. It gets very complicated. You know, how long you have to sleep for Birchas HaTorah. So I kind of woke up. I'm not really sure. My wife had slept. She was Yotzei L'Chodesh, whenever she was Zoichet to sleep better than I was in that particular flight. Usually it's the other way around, but that particular flight, I remember. So I turned around and I said, you know, you really have to say Birchas HaTorah, and I'm not sure I have to say Birchas HaTorah, so maybe you'll be motzi me in Birchas HaTorah. She looked at me like I had just landed from the moon. So I I get a little suspicious, you know. He said, "What? What did you say?" I said, "Okay, forget it. It's a Mishnah Berurah with a Bir Agroah, and it's very complicated." But I don't know whether we actually did it or not. She was just so blown away by the concept. But it's just to highlight the fact that women should be saying brachas Torah every day. So the bottom line is, yes, women should be saying brachas, and she would say brachas Torah as well. So I think we worked backwards through the tefillah, but we left a couple of things hanging in the other direction. Namely, after Shemoneh Esrei comes Tachanun. So Tachanun, I'm going to ask for a show of hands. How many women here say Tachanun? So I see it's about a tie between those women who daven Ma'ariv. Maybe it's the same women, I don't know anything. So somehow, I have this like Masorah that my wife told me from her high school. Where that came from, I don't know. Girls don't say Tachanun. Why girls is that? I don't know why, I don't know where, I don't know who, I don't know where it came from, but somehow the girls don't say Tachanun. Okay, that's, I guess everyone must have gotten the same Masorah that the girls don't say Tachanun. Why, anyone know why? No idea why. So those women who do say Tachanun should continue to say Tachanun. Those women who don't say Tachanun, so you can continue not saying Tachanun. If you live in certain communities, so you almost never say Tachanun. I daven usually in Bnei Ashurin and Tinek. I very rarely say Tachanun because there's always a bris. There's always something going on. You daven Hasidic communities, so then if any Rebbe ever died, so then there's automatically no Tachanun. The odds are that some Rebbe, there's been a lot of Rebbe, it's been a couple hundred years of Hasidus. It's got to be a couple of Rebbe who daven and died on any given day, so you always get off Tachanun. And then Mincha is always a freebie for Tachanun because it's always after Shkia, which you're not supposed to be davening anyway after Shkia. Again, it's a whole different story. I'll tell you a funny, you want to hear a really good Shmacha Tachanun story. Hopefully I won't repeat it tonight because I'm flying back to America, but it was also one of our early trips. This, my daughter was actually born in this one because I remember the fiasco that we had. We were flying back from Eretz Yisrael, and it was a Motzei Shabbos flight, and you know, it took off normal, and then about 2 hours into the flight, the pilot gets on and makes that announcement that you don't want to hear on any flight. That was, sorry to tell you, but everything's okay, but we have to make an emergency landing. Now, that's usually a contradiction, Minei Ubei, everything's okay. So then he tried to explain, kind of fumfkid, what exactly that means. He said, well, we started out with four engines, one of them is gone, and we're really technically allowed to fly with three, but, common practice dictates that we don't try to cross an ocean with only three, because if you get down to two, then the plane comes out or something. He was trying to be nice, funny about it, but no one was in a very good jovial mood at the time. So we're making an emergency landing in the closest airport. It happened to be in Rome. Now, on a Sunday morning at 6 o'clock in the morning in Rome, go find someone who's going to fix your plane. You think the blue laws in Bergen County are tough? Go try to find the mechanic in Rome here or whatever. We'll leave it at that, okay? So we were sitting, and it came time to daven Shacharis. So we daven Shacharis. I'll tell you two stories. One was a powerful story, and then I'll get to the funny Tachlin story. The powerful, powerful story was that we had a bunch of people went to daven Shacharis, and all of a sudden we see that there were a whole group of police and soldiers in the airport surrounded us. And we got a little bit nervous. I said, no, and they're broken in the door. No, we're just there to protect you. Nobody should start up with you. So I thought to myself, wow. I said, look how far we've come. I said, these are the Roman soldiers. How many years ago? Not that long ago, 2,000 years ago, when they destroyed the base mixtures, threw us out of Eretz Yisrael. Now they're standing around us, standing in a thousand field, protecting us. Nobody should harm us. Strange, a kind of broken, strange ways of running the world. But the funny part of the story was that it came time to say Tachanun. So one of the people on the plane announces, there's no Tachanun here. You know why? Because there's no Sefer Torah. The minig is, many have a minig, if there's no Sefer Torah, you don't fall Tachanun. You only fall in front of Naran Kodesh. You just say the words. So he made up a new Chiddush that there's no Sefer Torah, there's no Tachanun. So one of the boys was on the plane, actually was a fellow from Yeshiva from YU with me. He screams out, no, there's a Sefer Torah. Everyone looks crazy. Rome on a Sunday with Sefer Torah. He says, look, he opens up his knapsack and he pulls out a mini Sefer Torah. He had been, a sofer had sent it back with him to a shul. It was a small Sefer Torah that was sitting in his, no, it's high, nothing on it, just the cloth. Said he's carrying it back to America. The guy was floored. So believe it or not, we said, the soldiers waited for another minute, we dived in Shachris, we said Tachanun, we fell in the field of Sapayim in the airport in Rome. Then we had to wait another 15 hours for the plane to get the fix, but that was the end of the story. That's how I remember that my daughter was born. That one, because we didn't have any food to feed her, it became a whole fiasco about getting her food in Rome, and that was already another time. Maybe we get to look at Kashrus Shirim, another time, another place. We'll tell you some of the cools we had to pull out of the hat for that one, but not for now. Anyway, so up until now, we've been talking pretty much about almost daily tefillah. When we get to a special tefillah, namely Shabbos and Yom Tov, so of course there's another tefillah that we have to deal with. That's the tefillah of Musaf. Where do women's obligation fit in terms of Musaf? So interestingly, there are some poskim who say that women are exempt from Musaf. Strange. Why? Manish not a Musaf. Because Musaf is, unlike the other tefillahs have the aspect of rachamim to them. Musaf is not really tefillah shirachamim. It's really a tefillah of karbonos. It's a different type of a tefillah than Shachos Bircha Ma'ariv. And some argue that perhaps women are exempt, and others disagree. And the minhag olam is the women do daven musaf. No question, women should be encouraged to daven musaf. But strange as it may sound, if push comes to shove, you have to either daven musaf or mincha. So a woman has a greater obligation to daven mincha than she has to daven musaf. Now, on Yom Kippur, that may sound like a little, you know, disheartening here. I spend staying shul, meis nefesh to stay for a whole musaf, and mincha gets lost in the shuffle. So in terms of hierarchy of tefillah, taka mincha, but women, mincha is more important than musaf. But again, on a regular week in, week out, Shabbos, Yom Tov, so women should try to daven musaf as well as the other tefillahs as well. So again, so we try to give a little bit of an overview, and there's obviously a lot more in Hukos tefillah that meets the eye, but at least a little bit of an overview in terms of women's obligation. And let's not forget, put everything into the proper perspective of the B'chol Levavchem. It's really an opportunity, whether it's a chiyav, whether it's a kiyom, whether it's a ptua, reshut, whatever it is, it's a great opportunity to speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We should take advantage of the opportunity, not just in the tefillos that are kavuos, that are instituted, the words by Chazal, but the Ikar Mitzvah tefillah, we shouldn't forget, as the Ram says, talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the things in our mind, whether we want to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for something, we want to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we want to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu, any time, in any shape or form that we can relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the ultimate mitzvah of the B'chol Levavchem, and that's equally true for men and women. That's something that we should hopefully follow the role models of the Avos HaKadoshim, Moshe Rabbeinu, David HaMelech, all the great personalities in Tanakh who always spend so much time and effort. We love the B'chol Levavchem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be memali all of our mishlo sibei mitova for us and for all of Klal Yisrael. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for everything.
Oh, yeah.